Good afternoon, and welcome to everyone who's joining us on the internet as well. I gave you all two prayers, and I'd like to talk about them for just a moment. The first one was, I wish to see the evidence of love. And the second one was, I wish to be the evidence of love. These are two very significant prayers. Significant because they are the means by which you can neglect the prayer you all say every day, which is, I wish to see whatever it is I need to see in order to protect my ass. Watch your behavior, and you will be able to tell what your real prayer is. You get up late, you jump in the car, you rush down the freeway, and you watch to see if the police are behind you. You come into the office and you punch in 1 minute before start time, and you look to see if the boss noticed that you just made it. You sit down and you take a look at your day to see what good things are in store. No, you check to see what are the things that are going to be difficult so you can be prepared for them. You're constantly looking at your world to get your guidelines so that you can manage to get to the end of your day somewhat gracefully and without having made anything worse. Now, that's a rather severe description. But you'll all agree that it's amazingly accurate and in one way or another describes most of your days. Now, the thing to remember is that you will see what you're looking with. You always see what you're looking with. You will always find your world reflecting back to you the attitude with which you are looking at it. If you are depressed, the clouds are depressing. If you're full of joy, the clouds are beautiful. Or you say, oh, wow, this is a good, chilly day. A great day to have a hot, inside warming dish. I've been waiting for this day because I can't have it on hot days. What you're looking with is what you will see. And so these two prayers are significant. The first one, I wish to see the evidence of love. Well, what is one of the outstanding characteristics of the evidence of love? Its loveliness. So you're asking to see loveliness in your world, the evidence of love, that which is a pleasure to see, a pleasure to experience. And when that is what you are looking with, I promise you, that is what you will begin to see reflected back to you. I wish to see the evidence of love. Now, God is love. And so when you say, I wish to see the evidence of love, you're really saying, I wish to see the evidence of the presence of God. If that isn't included in the meaning of the words, I wish to see the evidence of love, you're not being open enough. Because you don't want to just see the evidence of friends and neighbors and acquaintances being loving toward each other. You want to see the evidence of the love that God is embodying in and as the world. So your prayer not only gives your attention a direction, it also causes your attention to open up to something larger than whatever is already in your memory banks. It is an invitation to let something bigger in than just you. Now, when you say, I wish to be the evidence of love, it establishes an intent in your mind about you. And how can you be the evidence of love? By letting the love that God is through you extended to an object or objects of your affection. In other words, it's an intent on your part to extend love, what? From your puny little mind? No. From the source of love. So that you might embody God. So that you might embody the excellence that is in you. And so once again, it's more than just you embodying love. It's you opening the door for an awareness of God in you, flowing through you, because you want to be able to embody it, extend it, give it presence in the world. So prayer is never private. Prayer is always, in one way or another, if it is real prayer, a joining with the Father, a joining with your brother. Why? Just so you can feel better? Just so you can have a less strenuous day? No, because doing this causes you to become an agent for change, what you might call a dynamic, healing presence. The Course uses the word correction often. This and that call for correction. And as I've said before, you've got to remember that correction isn't punishment. Correction is healing. Correction is the uncovering of what is real right where something unlike God seemed to be going on. Healing or correction is the uncovering of truth. Healing or correction is the uncovering of reality. Amongst Course students, the word healing receives far too little attention. And yet, if there is going to be redemption, there's got to be change. There's going to be change. There's going to be the replacement of that which is unlovely with that which is lovely, recognizably lovely. Something recognizably pleasurable to be experiencing and sharing. Okay, let's go into the book. Again, if you're in the Sparkly book, it's page 149, first full paragraph. In the second edition, page 117, first full paragraph. And the first edition, page 108, last full paragraph. To be in the kingdom is merely to focus your full attention on it. There's the magic word attention again. Your attention is God's treasure. As long as you believe that you can attend to what is not true, you are accepting conflict as your choice. Is it really a choice? It seems to be, but seeming and reality are hardly the same. You, who are the kingdom, are not concerned with seeming. What does that mean, you who are the kingdom? You remember last week I was saying that you are the singularity, because you are the conscious awareness which is boundaryless and therefore all-inclusive, and everything you're experiencing is going on within conscious awareness or mind. Mind is the kingdom. And you've got to remember, you've got to keep reminding yourself that everything you are experiencing that you're calling material is only material by your definition, but in actuality it is non-material. It is composed entirely and infinitely of ideas. So whether it's the flower, or the book, or the fingernail, it's an idea. And it's an idea in mind. It's an idea which mind formed. And I'm capitalizing the M because it's the infinite mind that is God that formed it. And that mind is what constitutes yours. And it is discovering the truth of that that we're calling awakening. So, you who are the kingdom, you, when you are, I'm going to say, being out from mind instead of being as a body, are not concerned with seeming. Reality is yours because you are reality. This is how having and being are ultimately reconciled. Not in the kingdom, it's not reconciled in the kingdom, but in your minds. The altar there, in your minds, is the only reality. The altar is perfectly clear in thought Because it is a reflection of perfect thought, with a capital T. A thought or idea in the mind of God. It sees only brothers, because it sees only in its own light. Now remember, what we're talking about here is you. We're talking about you as the conscious awareness in which your body and everything else is being experienced. But you are the unbounded, singular, conscious experience of being. Continuing, God has lit your minds himself and keeps your minds lit by his light, because his light is what your minds are. You see, awakening is a matter of shifting what you are using to identify yourself. Awakening is a matter of shifting from identifying with and as the body to identifying with and as pure conscious awareness, in which creation infinitely is being experienced. It's a shift of vantage point. And again, a shift of what you are using to identify yourselves by. And so again, God has lit your minds himself and keeps your minds lit by his light, because his light is what your minds are. This is totally beyond question. And when you questioned it, you were answered. The answer merely undoes the question by establishing the fact that to question reality is to question meaninglessly. Now it says, when you questioned it, you were answered. And the answer was, what you're trying to do is meaningless. And if you insist upon doing it, you will have a meaningless experience. You may, if you wish, do it, but understand that you aren't accomplishing anything at all. You aren't accomplishing anything at all. Again, the answer merely undoes the question by establishing the fact that to question reality is to question meaninglessly. That is why the Holy Spirit, which is nothing more than your right mind, never questions. His sole function is to undo the questionable and thus lead to certainty. So, you should be getting the idea that the movement of awakening will be a movement away from uncertainty and a million questions into certainty, in which only knowing is going on. Continuing, the certain are perfectly calm because they are not in doubt. They do not raise questions because nothing questionable enters their minds. This holds them in perfect serenity because this is what they share, knowing what they are. Now, this experience does not await you in the distant future. It awaits you in any moment in which you are willing to set aside concern, to set aside fretfulness, to set aside your confidence in your personal capacity to solve your problems, and to become still, and to turn toward the altar within you, and invite something more into your experience than just you and your capacity to figure things out. Now, you do this by saying help, or you do this by asking a question. Mind you, as long as you are in doubt, you will have questions, and it's not a sin to ask a question. It's only a mistake to ask a question of yourself. You want to ask the question of something that has certainty, God, or God's agent, if you will, the Holy Spirit, your divinity, which is held in trust while you dally with the ego. I wish to see the embodiment of love. I wish to be the embodiment of love. That's the way you open yourself up, in a relevant way. Relevant to you and relevant to your world. That's the way you open the door to serenity. Continuing, as has so often been said, healing is both an art and a science. It is an art because it depends on inspiration, in the sense that we have already used the term. Inspiration is the opposite of dispiriting, and therefore means to make joyous. When you say, I wish to see the evidence of love, you are inviting the experience of joy. You're opening the door for joy to come in. When you are looking, when you are wishing to see that which will help you or allow you to protect yourself better, you are looking through the lens of fear. And fear is the motivation, and fear is enervating, it is dispiriting, which means you experience a loss of energy, and you also block the experience of inspiration. Continuing, the dispirited are depressed, because they believe that they are literally, quote, without the Spirit, unquote, which is an illusion. It's impossible. You do not put the Spirit in them by inspiring them, because that would be magic, and therefore would not be real healing. And this is important. You do, however, recognize the Spirit that is already there, the capital S Spirit, and thereby reawaken it. This is why the healer is part of the resurrection and the life. This is why you are part of the resurrection and the life. The Spirit is not asleep in the minds of the sick, but the part of the mind that can perceive it and be glad is. And so healing is the reawakening of the awareness of this, of spirit in the one who is in need of healing when he or she thought it was gone. And you haven't changed them at all. You've just shined a light on something that was there but hidden in the darkness because they had closed the door on it. Healing, continuing, is also a science because it obeys the laws of God, whose laws are true. Healing is always a matter of you and the one being healed coming back into an awareness of the order of being, the orderliness of being, the harmony of being that exists whether you want to pay any attention to it or not. Referring to the laws, because they are true, they are perfectly dependable and therefore universal in application. In other words, at all times, in all places, under all circumstances, they always apply. Therefore, you are always in a state of security, whether you know it or not. And when you say, "I wish to see the evidence of love," you're saying, you're opening yourself up to the experience of this security, which is yours, you could say, by law. But it's not a law that's applied to you. It's the law of your being. It's the flawless order of your being that has forever been. Continuing, the real aim of science is neither prediction nor control, but only understanding. This is because it does not establish the laws it seeks, cannot discover them through prediction, and has no control over them at all. Science is nothing more than an approach to what already is. Now think about this. Science is nothing more than an approach to what already is. Awakening is nothing more than an approach to what already is. And again, you are neither behind the point of perfection nor advancing toward it. You are at that point and must understand yourself therefrom. You must approach what already is so that you may look at everything from there, including yourself. Continuing, like inspiration, it, meaning science, can be understood as magic and will be whenever it is undertaken as separate from what already is and perceived as a means for establishing it. You see, in healing, it's you're not busying yourself with establishing health. You're busying yourself with opening up to the already established order of everything that God has made, so that a misperception no longer gets in the way of the experience of it. It's you abandoning your heartfelt definitions that you have made up that are, by definition, different from what God is being. Your definitions are always an aberration, are always a distortion or a biasing of something already real. And in that sense, your definition constitutes a denial to one degree or another of that which already is. Healing is being willing to abandon your commitment to your definition with a curiosity to what? See the evidence of love there. See the evidence of God there. And so again, like inspiration, science can be misunderstood as magic and will be whenever it is undertaken as separate from what already is and perceived as a means for establishing it. To believe this is possible is to believe you can do it. This can only be the voice of the ego. You see, the ego says, you can do it. The ego says, it needs to be done. And God says, it was done from the beginning. It has always been. You don't need to do it over. You don't need to establish health. Health is the law of your being. Continuing, truth can only be recognized. And need only be recognized. When you know the truth, when you recognize the truth, I'm going to say when you recognize God's truth, you know the truth and you're no longer deluded. Which means that you no longer suffer from distorted perception. And so you see the truth. And the wart or the rash or whatever dis-ease you might be experiencing will cease presenting itself to you because you are no longer deluded. And correction will occur. But it will be a correction in your mind of a misperception, a correction that spontaneously occurred the moment you recognized truth and knew the truth that rendered the misperception invalid and no longer valuable to you. Continuing. Inspiration. Now, where did that come from? We're talking about truth. Well, truth, recognized, is experienced as inspiration. It is a shift from a tiny, tight, confined, defensive mental attitude and feeling into an open, singular, unlimited experience of reality, of truth, that is a joy to be experiencing, not only because you know you're knowing the truth, but because you're no longer experiencing insanity, and you're feeling your wholeness, and you're feeling your natural invulnerability. And that is inspiring. That is the experience of the inspiration of recognizing the truth and no longer being deluded. Inspiration, continuing, is of the Spirit, and certainty is of God, according to His laws. Both, therefore, come from the same source, since inspiration comes from the voice for God, and certainty comes from the laws of God. Healing does not come directly from God, who knows His creations as perfectly whole. Yet healing is still of God, because it proceeds from His voice, the voice for truth, the Holy Spirit, that which is nothing more than your right mind, and from His laws. from the unchanging, underlying, perfect structure. Integrity of God. Which, because it is of God, finds expression in everything that God is being. Continuing, it is their result in a state of mind which does not know Him. Meaning, as long as you are in ignorance and emerging out of it, healing for you is experienced as of God, because it proceeds from His voice and from His laws. The state of mind, which does not know Him, is unknown to Him. He doesn't know that you don't know Him. He knows that you know Him. And you're pretending that you don't. And you like your pretension better than reality. And because you believe that you are alone, you are holding on to that pretension for dear life because you think it's what's going to save you. The state is unknown to Him and therefore does not exist. But those who sleep are stupefied, or better, unaware. Because they are unaware, they do not know. Or, I'm going to be a little down and dirty here. Or, they feign, F-E-I-G-N, they feign not to know. Because it's more satisfying to be in a state of a denial of knowing, so that you can join with your brothers and sisters in the camaraderie of conflict. You all do know better. You all do know better. You're just choosing to ignore it, like hitting the snooze button on the alarm. Continuing. The Holy Spirit must work through you to teach you He is in you. Oh, well, here comes that involvement stuff again. If the Holy Spirit must work through you, it means that you have to be involved with someone else for the purpose of embodying love. I wish to be the embodiment of love. When that's your prayer, then that's the invitation to the Holy Spirit to reveal to you how to be the presence of love that has one purpose. Not to get something for itself, but to extend something of value to someone else. The Holy Spirit must work through you to teach you He is in you. This is an intermediary step toward the knowledge that you are in God because you are part of Him. The miracles which the Holy Spirit inspires, hear that? The miracles which the Holy Spirit inspires, inspiration brings about change of perception. Change of perception, change of the lens that you're looking through, changes the way you see everything. And everything reports back to you in a new fashion that embodies more of perfection. And healing, you would say, has occurred. The miracles which the Holy Spirit inspires can have no order of difficulty Because every part of creation is of one order. This is God's will and yours. God's will and yours are one. They aren't two. You don't stand separate from God, expressing a will identical to His. Your will and God's will are one and the same once you dare to abandon your so-called right to a will of your own and what you have called a God-given right to express your own will. Again, the miracles which the Holy Spirit inspires can have no order of difficulty, because every part of creation is of one order. This is God's will and yours. The laws of God establish this, and the Holy Spirit reminds you of it. Now, if the laws of God establish this, then the laws of God have established it. It's already established. You're already at the point of perfection and must understand yourself therefrom. It's already established. So you're not now going to become agents for change in the world so that you can establish the laws of God or the presence of God where it never was before. This is about yielding up the idea that you have a mind of your own and recognizing that if you have a mind at all, it must be the presence of mind, which is God. Then, in the abandonment of your so-called right to express your own mind, you let the mind of God in and through you. You will find the singular experience of order, harmony, perfection, beauty, loveliness in you and in everything. And whether you're looking at yourself or looking at something else, you will feel the singularity and know that it's you. Or know that you're it. It's all one. Continuing. When you heal, you are remembering the laws of God and forgetting the laws of the ego. And one very practical jog to your memory is to remember that you are under the laws of God, not under the laws of physics. Just contemplate that from time to time during the week. You are not governed by, bound by, the laws of physics. Because the laws of physics are nothing more than your misinterpretation of the laws of God. You think that the laws of physics keep you on the ground? Gravity? No. The idea that you are and that you're, and the ideas that compose your body are where they are right now because a simple decision has been made to be there. Right now you think you have no choice but to be bound to the chair you're in by gravity until you exert an opposite force and stand up. It's not true. The chair is an idea. The planet is an idea. Your body is an idea. And you are the mind in which all of those ideas are occurring. And how they relate to each other has to do with a decision you as mind are making. And you can reconfigure the orientation in your mind, and their relative positions will change because there's no matter to them to oppose it. And there are no laws of matter, laws of physics, to deny your decision as mind. Again, when you heal, you are remembering the laws of God and forgetting the laws of the ego. We said before that forgetting is merely a way of remembering better. Or you could say neglecting to reinforce your best definitions. Continuing, it is therefore not the opposite of remembering. Forgetting is not the opposite of remembering when it is properly perceived. Perceived improperly, it induces a perception of conflict with something else, as all incorrect perception does. Remembering and forgetting are not opposites. They're choices. If you neglect to remember, your mutually agreed upon definitions, if you neglect to reinforce those, if you neglect to remember them, because you desire to remember God's truth that was placed in you because you are His self-expression, then your choice is to remember something outside your memory banks, outside your the synapses in your brain that you think is the repository of memories. When you desire to remember what God placed in you from the beginning and is, and we could say, reconfirming eternally anew, your attention and intention is in a new direction, and you will neglect to reinforce or remember your mutually agreed upon definitions. And thus you will weaken your bondage to them. Properly perceived, continuing, it can be used as a way out of conflict, as I just described, as all proper perception can. All abilities, then, should be given over to the Holy Spirit, who knows how to use them properly. Well, here we go again. Let's be very clear. Turning them over to the Holy Spirit sounds like yielding to the Holy Spirit, sounds like submitting yourself to the Holy Spirit, subjecting yourself to the Holy Spirit, abandoning self-authority, abandoning self-responsibility, abandoning all that stuff that makes you respectable, becoming a puppet of the Holy Spirit. Oh! But if the Holy Spirit is nothing more than your right mind, then it's wise to submit to the Holy Spirit and yield to it, because you're yielding to your innate capacity to be utterly sane. All abilities, then, should be given over to the Holy Spirit, who knows how to use them properly. He can use them only for healing, because he knows you only as whole. Oh, well, there you go. Here you thought you're going to be able to be a healer and heal the world and be an agent for change. But the only way you'll end up being an agent for change is when you let the Holy Spirit's vision of your wholeness be communicated to you by it, so that you might see your wholeness and feel it, and you're the one that gets healed. And your healing is what gives you new eyes to look with. I wish to see the evidence of love. I wish to be the evidence of love. Continuing, by healing, whose? Yours. You learn of wholeness. And by learning of wholeness, you learn to remember God. You have forgotten Him, but the Holy Spirit still knows that your forgetting must be translated into a way of remembering, and not perceived as a separate ability which opposes an opposite. That is the way in which the ego tries to use all abilities, since its goal is always to make you believe that you are in opposition. Remember, that is the way in which the ego tries to use all abilities, since its goal is always to make you believe that you are in opposition, rather than that you are an indivisible, unconflicted singularity as pure mind. Now, you've got to remember, continuing, the ego's goal is as unified as the Holy Spirit's. And it is because of this that their goals can never be reconciled in any way or to any extent. Now, why would the ego's goal be as unified as the Holy Spirit's? Because whether or not you are consciously fully aware of being the Christ, or you are seeing yourself as a partitioned off part of creation that perceives everything through a lens of fear and defense and conflict, you are still the Christ. And so everything you do, whether it's in ignorance or not, is unified, because what you divinely are is a unity. The thing is that when that unity is used to attempt the impossible, or when that unity, when that singularity is used to try to establish an illusion, even though it is absolutely unified, it cannot succeed. Whereas the Christ, who knows he or she is the Christ, cannot fail in unified intent. Do you see what I'm saying? Whether you're conscious or unconscious of being the Christ, you are the Christ. Whether you act consciously or unconsciously, the act will be a unified act. But when the attempt is to do something that is impossible, outside the laws of God, no matter how unified the act is, the attempt cannot succeed. So the power of your being as the Christ right now cannot bear fruit when it is applied to an impossibility. Again, the ego's goal is as unified as the Holy Spirit's, and it is because of this that their goals can never be reconciled in any way or to any extent. The ego always seeks to divide and separate. The Holy Spirit always seeks to unify and heal. Now, if you are the Christ, and you are a singularity, if I may put it that way, then you cannot use the, for lack of better words, authority and power of your Christhood and your singularity to create division. Do you see that? It won't work, because that which is singular cannot make anything unlike itself. Continuing, as you heal, you are healed, because the Holy Spirit sees no order of healing. Healing is the way to undo the belief in differences, being the only way of perceiving the sonship without this belief, without the belief of separateness, where you're constantly in conflict with each other and you're constantly having to negotiate peace. Continuing, this perception is therefore in accord with the laws of God, even in a state of mind which is out of accord with His. The strength of right perception is so great that it brings the mind into accord with His, God's, because it yields to His pull, which is in all of you, to oppose, this is beautiful, to oppose the pull or the will of God is not an ability, but a real delusion. The ego believes that it has this ability and can offer it to you as a gift. You do not want it. It is not a gift. It is nothing at all. God has given you a gift which you both have and are. When you do not use it, you do not know you have it. By not knowing this, you do not know what you are. Healing, then, is a way of approaching knowledge by thinking in accordance with the laws of God and recognizing their universality. Thinking in accordance with the laws of God. Thinking, ah, I am neither behind the point of perfection nor advancing toward it. I am at that point, and I must understand myself from there. Wow. Without this recognition, continuing, without this recognition, you have made the laws themselves meaningless to you, the laws of God. Yet the laws are not meaningless, since all meaning is contained by them and in them. Seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, because that is where the laws of God operate truly. And they can operate only truly, since they are the laws of truth. But seek this only because you can find nothing else. There is nothing else. God is all in all, in a very literal sense. All being is in him who is all being. You are therefore in him, since your being is his. Your mind is God's mind. Healing is a way of forgetting the sense of danger the ego has induced in you by not recognizing its existence in your brothers. This strengthens the Holy Spirit in both of you because it is a refusal to acknowledge fear. Remember, healing is a way of forgetting the sense of danger the ego has induced in you by not recognizing its existence in your brothers. Healing strengthens the Holy Spirit in both of you because it is a refusal to acknowledge fear. And I'm going to say it's a neglect to acknowledge fear. See, I don't want you to attack fear. Now we have polarization, we have conflict. Neglect to energize fear by having a different intent. Ah, I wish to see the evidence of love. Well, as long as you wish to see the evidence of love, you are neglecting to energize fear. You're not trying to get rid of it, you're just neglecting to embody it. Continuing, love needs only this invitation. I wish to see the evidence of love. Love needs only this invitation. It comes freely to all the sonship, being what the sonship is. By your awakening to it, you are merely forgetting what you are not. This enables you to remember what you are. So, what do you do to remember who you are? You wish to see the evidence of love, and you wish to be the evidence of love. This is the invitation to inspiration. Which is an experience of joy. It's an invitation to the experience of loveliness, recognizable loveliness. It's the invitation to that which is real. And by virtue of your giving your attention and intention there, you naturally weaken whatever your mutually agreed upon definitions are, whatever you have made up as a biased perception of reality. It weakens it by neglecting to energize it. Your healing comes with the healing of others. And the healing of others occurs by an intent on your part to see the truth there where it seems not to be going on. To see the truth there as God is being it there, regardless of appearances. Why? Because you don't want to be deluded. You wish to see the evidence of love. and you wish to see the evidence of love more than you wish to engage in the exhilarating experience of conflict and winning. A sign outside a casino says, "Come in and win." Oh, it could just as easily say, "Come in and lose." You see? So, this week, remember the two prayers. I wish to see the embodiment of love. I wish to be the embodiment of love. And remember it in the context of healing. Healing will keep this from being an intellectual process and will ground it in what I'm going to call creation. Your hand that has a wart, a blemish, that needs not to have a blemish because that doesn't express harmony, perfection, loveliness. I wish to see the embodiment of love. It means I wish to see more of the evidence of God here than I'm seeing. It doesn't mean I wish to engage in a contest with matter because truth is more powerful than matter and truth will win out. It's not a contest, because matter is like your lap. Where does your lap go when you stand up? Matter is just an attitudinal perspective, a way of perceiving. It's a way of perceiving something incorrectly. And what it is that is being misperceived is pure spirit. Ideas in the mind of God that are perfectly recognizable and tangible to the mind that formed them. The ideas. Because what I'm looking at is not matter governed by the law of physics, and because it is an idea, which I know is intangible in the sense that I, in opposition to the tangibility of matter as I have defined it, I know that reconfiguration can occur because of the fluidity of spirit, if I may put it that way. And so when I say, I wish to see the evidence of love or healing, you're saying, I wish to see the evidence of love on God's terms. I wish to see the reconfiguration from the way it looks to me right now to the way it really is. I wish to see that reconfiguration occur according to the laws of God, which are not limited to the so-called laws of matter. Therefore, what I'm doing in wishing to see the evidence of love is freeing creation up from the bondage of my definitions of matter and the laws of physics. I am freeing it up from those so that it can, in a completely unfettered manner, identify God now and I am not holding it to a process in time. That's what you're doing when you say, I wish to see the evidence of love. There are robots being developed. Humongous. That a human being can get inside of and take hold of controls, and the machine will duplicate the acts of the human being's body, but on a large scale, so that things requiring a great deal more strength can be accomplished. Can you imagine climbing into one of those machines in the morning and, you might say, walking out to do your job with the power of this humongous machine? And experiencing it all day long. And then at 5 o'clock, climbing out and just being this puny little, in your mind, flesh and blood thing by comparison, who can't lift more than 150 pounds and who gets tired out. Can you imagine the depression that one would experience after being so powerful all day long, apparently through the use of this tiny body? Well, what I want you to understand is that right now you are feeling tiny. You are feeling powerless. You are feeling limited. And waking up is the reverse of the illustration I just gave you. Coming into the singularity of your whole mind, of your mind being whole and infinitely all-inclusive, and that this is your identity, coming into this awareness is, for lack of better words, an expansion into the experience of infinity, wholeness that is, for lack of better words, huge. And the key lies in releasing everything from the bondage you have placed it under as a result of applying laws of matter to it and definitions of it that say it is capable of sin, sickness, and death. Deterioration is inevitable. Blah, blah, blah. Write the word healing on a slip of paper and put it on your refrigerator all by itself, just to remind you of a focus for your attention this week. Mind you, I haven't given you hard work. It will take some self-discipline, but it doesn't take a monster robot for you to connect with in order to do it. It takes you doing even less than you've been doing. It takes you neglecting to energize fear. It takes you neglecting to determine that you're bound to die or someone else is bound to die because of an illness. It takes you neglecting to reinforce limitation. And it takes you instead to wish to see the evidence of love, and to wish to be the evidence of love, and nothing else. And to do this no matter what you're engaged in your day. You can look at it and say, well, if this isn't matter, and if this isn't all ego dynamics going on here, and if it really is God and none of us are seeing it, what is the truth here? I wish to see the evidence of love. And I wish to be the evidence of love by caring enough to wish to see the evidence of love. And with that, I'll say I have enjoyed being with you again, and I look forward to being with you next week. You might call this the fun part of the course. Enjoy this week. Enjoy observing healing. Enjoy seeing the embodiment of love where it didn't seem like it was possible it could be embodied. And remember that the reason you're seeing it embodied is because you neglected to hold creation to your puny, tiny, defensive, conflicted perception of it.